Now, then I wonder if the clergy person doesn't say, please be seated, whether the congregation will remain standing, even though they know they don't really need the directive, but we are sheep, aren't we? That's better to be sheep than goats, bearing in mind today's reading. But it is lovely to be with you again, and I'll just disclose something to you. When I realised that Russell had asked me to come today, I thought, oh, I think I can remember preaching on Christ the King last year. I'll just have a quick look at that sermon and see if there are any pearls there. And then I looked it up and I thought, this is quite a good sermon. I realised where it was, and it was Christchurch Geelong. So I thought, I can't possibly take any of those supposed pearls. So here I am, and it's always good anyway to preach afresh. And I do want to reassure you that I do mostly preach afresh. But in my reading to prepare for today's sermon, I was reminded of a very well-known, don't worry if you don't know it, life-size sculpture that was created in 2013 by the Canadian Timothy Schmotz, and it's called The Homeless Jesus. Now, don't worry if you don't know it, but I would encourage you, if you just Google The Homeless Jesus, it will come up. You'll have an image of Jesus on a park bench, like these park benches, as I was remarking to Russell as we processed around. Park benches, if you can imagine Jesus on a park bench. And I understand that since he sculpted this, there have been casts set all over the world. So Jesus is lying on a park bench, huddled beneath a blanket. The only giveaway that this is Jesus are his 2 feet protruding from the blanket, both with very convincing wounds. Dead giveaway. Schmotz described his artwork as a visual translation of this passage from Matthew 25 that we've heard today and that we hear every year on this feast of the reign of Christ. I can't think of a more poignant contemporary visual translation of the gospel. Actually, not just about this passage from Matthew chapter 25, but a visual image, a visual translation of the whole of the Gospels. Here is Christ our King, not only identifying with the homeless, he is the homeless. As the Gospel reminds us, whenever you visited the sick, went to prison, welcomed the stranger, fed the hungry, clothed the naked, you did it to me. Conversely, whenever you didn't do this, you didn't do it to me. If ever we need to reflect on what kind of a King Jesus is, we need only think of these words and that sculpture, that image of Jesus lying on the park bench, shrouded with a blanket. He's that kind of King. Of course, a king is not a king without a kingdom and a rule. So what does this kingdom look like? What's the royalty he describes? And what's it like to be under the rule of this king? And that's where we come in, for we are his subjects, after all. We're his representatives. We deliver his royal message. The thing is, it's nothing grand, this role of ours as subjects of Christ's kingdom. And why would we expect it to be if our King is the homeless Jesus? And actually, our role might be downright tedious at times, routine and humdrum. For acts of service are rarely glamorous when you think about it. Yet, when they are received, they become riches beyond compare. This is the paradoxical nature of our King's royalty, shown by the naked Jesus the homeless Jesus, the sick Jesus, hungry Jesus, imprisoned Jesus, wounded Jesus. We're unlikely to recognize this homeless king so easily amongst the wealthy and the privileged, though that's not to say that he is not there. For what does poverty mean? What does need mean? In our world, and in our COVID-19 world, however we answer that question, we are likely to find him amongst the sick and the dying, and the unemployed and underemployed, and the depressed and the lonely and the isolated, and the heartbroken and the grieving. We might see him sitting on a park bench with the fearful and the apprehensive and the displaced. This is where our homeless King Jesus will be found. Nothing grand, but where else would we look for Christ our King, except in the places where people need to know that they are loved and cared for and noticed? These are your neighbours, says Jesus to us. These are your brothers and sisters, your parents, your loved ones. Whatever you do to them, you do to me. I'm thinking actually of this setting here. I know we're dealing with a few spits, but these park benches in the midst of this beauty, and that's where they belong. You can recognize the reign of Christ whenever love and compassion are shown, even when that seems humdrum and dull and uninteresting and mundane. It's not the warm, fuzzy kind of red heart and pink kisses kind of love. Lovely though that is, but the kind of love that won't be dependent on reciprocity and reward and acknowledgement. It's the love that Jesus commands us to show to God, neighbour and self. The love that comes out of obedience. It's the imperative to love that must be shown by our actions and our commitments. It's the understanding of love that sheds light, say, on Jesus' commandment elsewhere in the Gospel to love our enemies. And it's the love that makes us vulnerable, because we have to ask ourselves, do I want to be this kind? Do I want to be this obedient? Do I want to make this kind of effort? And yet here we all are, perhaps because deep down we know that it's this kind of love that provides riches beyond all. I worked in a hospital for 6 years with people with progressive neurological diseases, and their diagnoses, that's things like MND, motor neurone disease, Huntington's disease, and their diseases' diagnoses were always terminal, though many lived for several years adjusting and readjusting to their progressive symptoms. I worked there as a clinical psych. It was one of the most privileged jobs I've ever had, and here's an example of why. I'd often walk down the corridor from my office to the waiting area to collect the client. We'd do that slow walk back to my room. It often seemed a very long walk, although it was only about 15 metres. And during that time, I'd be praying, please help me, God, to know what to say to this person to help them. I felt like I was the one who had to give them hope in a space that often outwardly looked so hopeless. Answers to unanswerable questions. Calm in the face of uncertainty and unknowing. Encouragement in the face of functional decline. Strategies to assist with improving anxiety and low mood when they and their families were facing a slow and often very difficult death. None of these hard truths magically changed once the client and I walked through the door of my office, but I still had a job to do, because there in front of me was the homeless Jesus. needing whatever act of kindness and compassion that I could offer, however humble that was. And at times it certainly was that. Nothing grand, but nonetheless an offering that came out of a commitment to feed and attend. Our motivation for loving is knowing that the one who first loved us is the homeless Jesus. I hope as I'm talking to you that this resonates with you with your own important ministry to the people in need in Geelong. The reign of Christ, Christ our King, the King who leads in a way that's like no other leader. His throne, a lonely park bench, his robe, a tattered blanket, his feet bare and bearing the marks of suffering. One final image of Christ our King and what it means to live under the reign of Christ. A few years ago on Maundy Thursday, I attended a church service and received the washing of the feet. The priest washed the feet of those who sat in waiting chairs. I didn't know he was going to do this, but after each foot washing, he gently dried the individual's foot, got up, and genuflected in front of the person. A liturgical symbol of self-emptying. The God who, as one person put it, empties himself of all privilege. The God who perpetually pours himself out and surrenders his own life for his loved one. What does it look like with the eyes of our hearts enlightened if we live as loyal, faithful subjects under this roof? How does it feel to genuflect to the homeless Jesus, to whomever we identify as the broken and the wounded and needy? Because whenever we did, we would be genuflecting to Christ our King. And it won't be glamorous. It may seem ordinary. And at times very confronting. And often you won't have a clue what it means, but whenever you do it, you'll be doing it for our King. We cannot ignore that this passage is one about judgment, a theme in Matthew's Gospel. Jesus is not only the homeless Jesus, he's also our exalted King and Judge. It is, after all, a parable about sheep and goats, saved sheep and cursed goats. But note the reasons for the separation. Not beliefs about doctrine, not even creedal statements, but how we've shown kindness and compassion. So rather than interpret this as a judgment parable to evoke fear in us and fear of eternal damnation, because our behaviours will always fall short, it's a serious call to all the nations to keep turning up for God, to keep responding in obedient love to the call of our King, and to engage in acts of mercy. For the majesty will be found in this ordinance. We'll find it for sure underneath the blanket in the man with the wounds who's lying on that park bench, even in the rain. Amen.